morning. So I think to start today, I'm going to teach you the greeting that we would use if we were in my church in Bolivia. These are the words up here on the screen. It's in Quechua, which is the language that most people in the area that I lived spoke in addition to Spanish. So Imainaya means hi, how are you? And Walejia, just fine. So I'm going to let you all greet each other in a moment. The other part of the greeting is to shake the person's hand, then pat their shoulder, and then shake their hand again. So I'll show you what that looks like. Nancy, can I pick on you? So if we were in my church, we would probably greet every single person that way, but I'm not going to have you do that this morning. So turn to the person or the people next to you and go ahead and greet them. Try out the Quechua. It's okay if you don't pronounce it right. Imainaya and Walejia. So thanks for being up for that. It's really hard to condense 2 years into just the sermon time today, but I think I'll just do my best to share what I can, and I'm really thinking of this more just as sharing rather than really a sermon. What I'm going to do is share what I did in Bolivia, what my work and my life was like, some of those things, and some of the joys and challenges and reflections from the past 2 years. I was in Bolivia with MCC, Mennonite Central Committee, as part of the SEED program, which is one of MCC's young adult programs. It's 2 years long, and it's for groups of young adults who form a cohort, and young adults from all over the world, not just from one certain region, who form a cohort and who are each assigned to work with one of MCC's local partners in the country that they're working in. So I was one of 6 different seeders in Bolivia, and we were all scattered throughout the western part of the country. To start, let's look at where Bolivia is. Bolivia is in South America, right in the middle. It's a landlocked country that is bordered by Peru, Brazil, Paraguay, Argentina, and Chile. It has a lot of different geographies and a lot of different cultures. And here's a closer look. So MCC's office in Bolivia is in the city of Santa Cruz, which is there in the east. That's where MCC's office is, and that's where most of MCC's workers are in the country. We seeders were actually the only MCCers in the west. So I was placed in the city of Yayagua, which is there with the red dot with the white arrow pointing to it. That's in the western part of the country in the Andes Mountains. Yayagua is a small city. It's in the northern part of the Department of Potosí. They call departments, like we would say, states or provinces. It's very mountainous. It's very high altitude. It was about 3,900 meters above sea level, which is 12,700 feet above sea level, but it wasn't all flat, so that varied a little bit. It was very cold and dry. It was a high desert, and it was a mining center. So it's kind of the one city in that region. They extract tin there, and in the outlying areas, it's a lot of small rural communities that would mostly be small-scale agriculture-based. So a lot of people migrate from the rural communities to Yayagua. This is the group of seeders. On the left side is our program coordinator, Graham Watson from Canada, and we seeders are all next to him. So there were 6 of us, almost all from different countries. Andrea beside Graham is from Colombia. Denia in the pink shirt is from Honduras. I'm in the middle. Catalina in the light blue shirt is from Colombia. Aaron is from Canada, and Elisa is from Mexico. So we were the group of cedars for this cycle, and we were all living in pairs. So there were three different groups of us living in different cities in Bolivia. Me and Catalina, beside me in the blue shirt, lived in Yayagua, which is where the white arrow is. Elisa and Andrea lived in Cochabamba, which is a little bit north of Yayagua and a little bit east. And Aaron and Denia lived in La Paz. This is the MCC team in Bolivia. This is a picture from our retreat in December. Like I said, everybody in this picture is based in Santa Cruz, except for the Cedars. So our experience was actually pretty different from a lot of the rest of the MCC team in the country. The climate is really different. Comparing the east and the west of the country, Santa Cruz is hot and humid and green, and the west where we were was very dry and cold and brown. So we really enjoyed our opportunities to go to Santa Cruz. The cultures are pretty different too. There's a lot of different indigenous cultures in Bolivia, and the ways that they live is pretty different, partly due to the climate, but culture was different too. And the livelihoods are different. In Santa Cruz, it's a lot of more like larger industry and large-scale agriculture. And in the West, more small-scale agriculture and extraction, a lot of mining and of silver and tin and different minerals. Also, all of the Mennonites in Bolivia are in the East, in the Santa Cruz department. So that's where the Bolivian Evangelical Mennonite Church is. That's also where there are lots and lots of Mennonite colonies. So those Mennonites would be much more conservative in their dress and their technology. They drive horses and buggies, and they speak Low German. So sometimes when I would tell people that I was Mennonite, they would say, oh, where's your long dress and your horse? And do you sell cheese? Because a lot of them produce cheese. The partner organization that I worked for, and actually Catalina did too, is called PRODI. So in Spanish, that's Programa de Desarrollo Integral Interdisciplinario, which is the Integral or Comprehensive Interdisciplinary Development Program. They are a non-religious NGO based in Yayagua that works in the rural communities in the north of Potosí. They've been working there for 24 years. It'll be 25 years this April. And mostly their projects focus on food security. Potosí is the department in Bolivia that is the most impoverished. People say that there's a paradox in Potosí. It's the most rich in minerals, but it's got the poorest population because things are extracted and those benefits don't go to the people who live there, kind of like some parts of the U.S. that are not too far away from here. It's a pretty rural area also. There's not very many urban centers. And like I said, a lot of people are small-scale farmers and migrate part of the year to a city to earn some money working there or to work in a mine. PRODI's overall goal, I would say, is to help people be able to live well. El buen vivir, or living well, is kind of their overall goal, which is just improving quality of life. Buen vivir really means like finding balance between human beings and nature, balance between men and women, balance between adults and children. Everything is in harmony and works as it should. And they do that so that people don't have to migrate. They want people to be able to have a good life in their home community and not be forced to migrate to survive if they don't want to. So they have four focus areas that they kind of focus their work in. Those are up there: sustainable resource management, mitigation and adaptation to climate change, supporting the rural economy, and supporting gender and generational equity. So what that looks like in some of their projects is teaching people to diversify their crops so that if one thing doesn't do well, they have other crops also that they can eat. Teaching people to diversify their diet, learning to eat vegetables that they didn't know about, in a literal sense, some people don't know about vegetables in that part of the world because it's really hard to grow things at that altitude and in that climate. They build water catchment systems for irrigation. They have urban gardening projects for people who don't have land that they can plant in if they live in a town, teaching them to use recycled plastic materials to have flower pots with vegetables on their patios. And they also support sustainable practices like using compost rather than chemical fertilizers, building terraces to conserve soil, and bringing back more native crops that do better in those temperatures and at that altitude. So my work with them was mostly in their office. They work out in those rural communities a lot of the time, but I was mostly in the office. I did a lot of translations because we would sometimes get emails that would come to the office in English. I also helped with grant writing. A lot of the financing organizations, when they would apply for financing, that would have to be turned in English. So I would read the description of whatever we were thinking about applying for, talk to the director so that we could decide if it was a good thing to, if it fit with our goals and their goals, and translate that into Spanish so that they could write up what they wanted to turn in, translate it back into English so that we could turn it in, and then help with the communication between them. I also got to accompany a lot of visits for different events, like going to the inauguration of one of those water catchment reservoirs, or helping with an event in the office where people were learning to write proposals to turn into local government for different projects they had ideas for. I got to support the urban agriculture project. One of my favorite pictures that I took is the one on the bottom left. That's a pair of mining boots that now have strawberries growing in them. And another big project that I had was to try to measure the impact of Prodi's work. So that meant writing up a survey that we could use with the families that participate in their projects and hear about their experiences and see what sorts of things they had noticed that were different in their lives, comparing before they worked with Prodi to during or after. And that was something I had never done before and just kind of had to try to do it. And then I was also involved in some other projects in the office, like characterizing native potatoes and native seeds, writing down their characteristics so that they could be documented, and just documenting what types of things local farmers were growing. So that picture of the potatoes in a circle on the bottom left is a picture of all the different kinds of potatoes that came from two different farmers' land. I knew before I went to Bolivia that native potatoes were, that there were a lot of different kinds, but I had no idea how many. So there were over 50 kinds that we documented just from two people's land, and there were hundreds more than that. I also got to do a little bit of work directly for MCC. That was in the form of accompanying some learning tours that came. There were three different learning tours that came while I was there, which I got to accompany as an interpreter. The one on the top is from September of 2022, and Pastor Jim actually was in that group. So that was when a group of people came to Bolivia to tour around on motorcycles and visit all the different projects and learn about MCC's work there. There was also a group that came from Denver, from First Mennonite Church in Denver. Their youth group came to Bolivia in June of last year, and they spent 4 days with Prodi and got to visit some of those really rural communities, which was pretty cool. And there was a group that came from MCC, actually. People who work in MCC thrift shops made a group to come for a learning tour in August of last year, and I got to spend the whole 10 days with them together to interpret. That was something that I really enjoyed. I think that was my favorite part of the work that I did because I really liked to interpret, and I got to do that. I also got to introduce people from context that was more like my home context to my new context in Bolivia, introduce them to a place that I learned to love and see some of its impact on them. And I think especially with the youth group, I found getting to be involved in that really meaningful because my own cross-cultural experiences were transformative for me. And so I felt like it was a privilege to be able to be a part of that process, I hope for them, and facilitate bringing people together and helping them to make connections with each other. Some of the joys and challenges, like I said, the learning tours were a joy for me. Also, just moments of connection, I think, is the best way I can sum up most of the joys that I had. Getting to know the other people in the seed group and on the MCC team. This picture is from September of this past year when our seed group from Bolivia got to go to Guatemala to visit the new seed group that was just starting there. So we were able to spend 10 days together and get to know each other, share life together, and connect over some shared experiences. We were just ending our term and they were just beginning. So that was a really good thing to get to do. Also, finding community. It's hard work to build a community from scratch when you don't know anyone. And it was really rewarding to feel like I had friends in the place that I lived and to find a church family and run into people on the street that I knew and stop and talk to them, get to know the different street vendors that I bought. I bought eggs from Doña Benita, and I brought bread from another lady on the street corner by the bus stop, and I bought candles from another lady on the plaza. So just little connections like that I really enjoyed. And I think learning Quechua was something that really helped with that. Quechua is the indigenous language from that part of the country, and it's a devalued language there. People who speak Quechua are discriminated against if they can't speak Spanish. And so some people stop speaking the language. They don't teach their kids to speak Quechua because they don't want them to miss out on opportunities. And for that reason, the language kind of is slowly disappearing. And there are efforts to keep it alive, but I decided that even though in Yayagua most people are bilingual, they can speak Quechua and Spanish, so I wouldn't have had to learn Quechua to be able to live there. People really appreciated that I tried, even though I didn't get to be very fluent, just the fact that I could say a little bit, people found that to be really meaningful. I think that you can't really understand a culture if you don't speak the language of that culture. And I think that you can't really understand the language if you don't understand the culture. So that was my way of trying to show people that I was really interested in connecting with them on a deeper level than just the bare minimum. And that really did help me to build connections with people. There was one woman who sold yarn on the artisan vendor street in Yayagua. I was walking around with a friend one day, and we stopped and talked to her, and we were talking in Quechua, and my friend Esther, who I was with, said, "You should talk to Maria in Quechua. She knows how to speak it." And so she said, "Oh, okay, well, hi, how are you?" And I answered her, "What's your name?" "Maria." "Oh, Maria what?" "Maria Martin." And she said, "Oh, Martinez. The Martinezes are from Villa Circa. You must be from there, and we're probably related." So then it kind of became a joke, and every time we would see each other, like, "Oh, Doña Emilia, how are you, cousin?" So that was a big part of my... That was something I really enjoyed. I like studying languages and learning them, and I think that that really helped me to go deeper into the culture, even though I didn't get to be super fluent. Those are some of the joys. There were also challenges. One of the biggest ones was being far away when hard things happened at home. In September or October of 2022, my dad got his diagnosis of lymphoma, and so it was very hard to be far away when things were pretty uncertain and we didn't really know what would happen. Also, my uncle unexpectedly died in December of 2022, and so I was very homesick in January right after that because I couldn't be here to be around when Dad was figuring out what was going to happen, and also to be at the memorial service that all of my family was at. But I did have a lot of support. The MCC team in Bolivia was very supportive, even from afar. The rest of the Cedars, actually Ellie from Mexico, her dad also got a cancer diagnosis while we were there, and so the two of us didn't really want to have that connection, but we were able to support each other through that. And her dad is also doing really well now. People here also were support for me during that time. People sent me messages and said, "Just want you to know we're watching out for your parents and we're going to help them out with whatever we can." And so it was nice to just see those little messages and still feel connected. I also got to come to Virginia when Dad was in treatment at UVA. MCC has a policy that when a family member is ill, you can take 2 weeks to go home and visit, and I was able to do that, and I'm really glad that I did. Another one of MCC's resources that I was able to take advantage of is that they provide free counseling for service workers. And I really appreciated that because there was a counselor who was also an MCC service worker who I was able to talk to. And she actually sent us all a video just to introduce herself at the beginning of our term and said, I just want to introduce myself, tell you that I'm here if you ever want to talk to me. Don't feel like you have to feel like bad if you want to talk to a counselor. And so I did find her to be really helpful to talk to. She was someone who understood what life was like as a service worker and was just helpful to process difficult things that happened. And even when things weren't difficult, she was someone who could ask me questions in a different way from other people and help me to process things and think about things in a new way that I hadn't thought of before. So that is something that I'm really glad that I did. And I thought I would mention that just because I found it really helpful for her to say, don't feel like you have to feel bad to talk to a counselor or a therapist. I found it to be really helpful in a lot of different situations. I should probably also mention the cold. The cold was a really big challenge too. Even though Bolivia is closer to the equator than we are here, and even though part of the country is tropical, where I lived was very much not tropical. The high altitude meant that it was often in the 50s or 60s during the day if you were standing in the sun, directly in the sun, which would also burn you because of high altitude. But at night it was often below freezing. And there is no indoor heat in Bolivia, so that was a challenge to get used to. I did have ways to deal with that also. I learned pretty quickly that if I was too cold, I just had to go outside or find a sunny window to stand in, and that would help. And there were a lot of good wool products because people there have a lot of llamas and alpacas, so that helped a lot. And I discovered that candles were helpful because even though they didn't actually make the room feel warmer, they just made me feel like it was a cozy space. So there were little mind games that I learned how to play with myself. And the altitude. The altitude itself was also hard because it was so high up, almost 13,000 feet, that it took a long time to acclimate. And it was a long time of huffing and puffing and little easy things making me feel out of breath. But with time, we were able to acclimate to the altitude also. A few things that I learned. I think that, oh, maybe this sort of fits in the challenge part also. Learning to let go of the idea that you have to be productive to be valuable at work. Our work was focused on accompaniment, which is not a very clear-cut word. That's what we were assigned to do, accompany a local partner of MCC. So we spent a lot of time reflecting on what that means, and it was challenging because we didn't come in with a plan. I didn't actually know what partner I would be working in with in Bolivia until I got there. So the idea with accompaniment was that we went in, took the first month with our partner organizations to just observe and get to know them, learn about the work that they were doing, and then slowly figure out where our interests and our skills could fit in with that. So it was very much guided and directed by them and not us saying, this is what I'm coming in to do. And I was not an agronomist and I hadn't studied agriculture or I didn't have a lot of experience with the work that they were doing. I had never written a project impact measurement survey before and neither had anyone else there. So it was a lot of stepping out of my comfort zone and saying, okay, I've never done this before, but I'll try. And so I had to make peace with the learning process. Learning is a long process, which is really frustrating. We want to be able to just learn something and, okay, I learned it, now I can do it. But a lot of times it doesn't go that way, and you have to, in order to do something well, you have to do it not well for a long time, which is frustrating. but that's just the way it is. And so that was a challenge for all of us. I think all of us seeders shared that in that we wanted to feel more useful at work. And really the idea was that our ministry was more based on being present than being useful, which I was talking with Carolina Perez, who was the seed facilitator in Colombia for the past Colombia group. We were talking about this, like how about wanting to feel more useful and how that's not really the point, but it's still really hard to let go of. And she said that really what people remember about Cedars, she was the leader for like 3 or 4 different groups of Cedars, and so she had a lot of experience. And she said, what people remember isn't what you did. It's not how many events you were part of planning or how many workshops you did or how many projects you checked off the list. It's how you did your work. And so that was a good reminder to let go of that idea. And she also said that that's really a change of worldview. It's so ingrained that we have to be busy and productive in order to be valuable. But that's something that I want to keep trying to continue to unlearn. Not that that's not important, but it's not the most important thing. So speaking of unlearning, some of the things that I also learned were a lot more about the context of the north of Potosí, especially. It has a lot of history of mining. There's a lot of tin mines around the area where I lived, and there's a huge silver mine, well, a mountain that has a whole bunch of silver mines in it, in the city of Potosí. Actually, that mine is the one that financed, well, that one mountain is the one that financed the Spanish Empire for 500 years. So that's kind of hard to wrap your mind around, and also to visit there and see the conditions that a lot of people live in, especially the ones who work in those mines. And yeah, I think there's a lot of similarities between that part of the world and like the north of Potosí and Appalachia, for example. I learned a lot about what rural life is like. Even though I didn't spend as much time in the more rural communities, I did get to go and visit them quite a few times and learn about their challenges. A lot of them have no good roads, so it's really hard to get around to either to travel yourself or to take your products to the market to sell them where people will come and buy them. It's really hard to get to schools and to clinics for some of the people who live in the more isolated places. This picture is of the community of Moscari, which is one of the places where Prodi works. And you actually can't go to that community during the rainy season because the road gets too unstable with the rain and it's not safe to drive on. You can't even go with a motorcycle because if you can see it kind of in the background of the picture, there's a big dry riverbed. That's where the last part of the road is. And so in the rainy season, that fills up with water, and you have to know where the safe places are to walk through the water to go to and from that community. I also learned a lot about generosity. In spite of those challenges that those communities lived with, I knew that something I learned was that I always needed to take a little plastic bag along with me to those visits because we were probably going to be served a meal, and it was probably going to be a portion that was way more than I could eat. So I needed to have a little plastic bag so that I could take along home with me all the leftovers that I wasn't able to eat. The director of Prodi told me a story about someone who came and they took him on a visit out to one of those communities, and they taught him, whenever you're done eating and you don't want any more, what you should say in Quechua is, Dios pagara pusunki icha aswan kapusunki, which means, thank you very much, do you have any more? So I was really glad they didn't try to trick me into doing that. I learned a lot from the surveys that we eventually got finished. I know that it wasn't the most professional survey that was ever made, but I did get to go out to those communities and meet people and talk with them firsthand about what their experiences were working with Prodi. So I got to hear about the effects of climate change that they're seeing on their land, how the rain doesn't come when it's supposed to, and when it does come, now it just falls all at once in torrential downpours and washes their soil away. I got to hear about how once they had water catchment systems and a reservoir built, they were able to water whenever they needed to rather than just waiting for the rain. And that meant that some of them could harvest more than once a year. And if their crops got destroyed by a hailstorm, sometimes they were able to replant and have a crop anyway. I also learned that a lot of them said that their kids did better in school once they started eating vegetables. They were able to pay attention and they didn't need as much repetition to be able to learn their school material. So that was a really frustrating experience sometimes to write those surveys and try to figure out how to do it, but to actually be able to go out and talk to people and hear their experiences was something that I'm really thankful for. And I learned to just be more confident in myself. It's not easy to move to a new place where you don't know how to navigate, but it's really rewarding when you do figure that out And I remember at first being kind of afraid to hail a taxi because it wasn't something I had really done before. And then coming to a point where I realized, oh, yeah, I feel fine traveling by myself to this other city over here. And I know how to navigate. So I think I learned to be more at peace with my own abilities to adapt to new things and to problem solve. If something came up, it was going to be okay. I was going to be able to figure out how to get help with it or how to problem solve. And just some reflections. Now that I am back, I'm bringing a lot of things with me. One of the biggest things is just friendships. People like my friend Esther on the left side there. She was one of my best friends in Yayagua, and I really miss her. Also, my church family is in that picture there also. Esther's mom is the pastor of the church that I went to, and I felt like they took me in as a community, and I miss them too. People like my coworkers at Prodi, Angie and Arminda, and all of the technicians who would be in and out of the office depending on where they were working and which communities they were in. And of course, and our landladies, Tanya and Gladys. Tanya lived in the apartment just above ours, and they just kind of adopted us like two more sisters in their family. Tanya would often come down to our door on a Saturday and knock on the door and say, "Hi, Maria, did you already eat lunch?" "Yeah, I just finished lunch. I just ate." "Oh, well, I just cooked. Come upstairs and I'll give you a plate." And so it didn't really matter whether I had eaten or not already. I was going to come upstairs and I was going to eat again. And the Cedars. We were family to each other. Some of the best times were when we all got to be together. Since we were living in different places, we didn't get to see each other all that often. But a few times a year, we would come to Santa Cruz for MCC retreats, or we also would go and visit each other. So times that we were together were really meaningful, just because it's really important to spend time with people who are having a similar type of situation or experience when you're doing something like that. And I miss them a lot, too. Actually, Elisa from Mexico, who is in that picture on the bottom right, she's in the white shirt on the left side. She is the new seed facilitator for the next group, and so she just got back to Bolivia this week. So she's going to be part of another family of seeders. Other things that I'm coming home with are appreciation for new things, like new foods that I really learned to love, bright colors. The place that I lived was not very bright or colorful in its landscape. It was very brown and dry, but people wore bright colors. They carried around things in big square fabric aguayos, which is what they were called, and found ways to make their life colorful. And I really appreciated that. And a few other reflections. I actually did this almost this exact same presentation for the MCC team at our retreat in December. Since we were not living in the same place as them, we had the opportunity to share about our work and what we did so that they could get to know things too. And these are some of the same reflections I shared with them. That we're more similar than we are different. I think before you go to a new place or meet someone from a new culture, all you have in your mind are the different things that you know. Like, oh, I know that this is different between me and them. But when you actually meet each other, you realize that the differences are a whole lot less than the similarities. The same sorts of things make people cry. The same sorts of things make people laugh. I chose this picture of me and Vicky Mamani. She works for a different one of MCC's partners in the city of El Alto. And she's just like the most, I don't know even how to describe it, just like the stereotypical mom. Like, she will just pull you in into her warmth and love you. And she was a person who, I feel like, if there are differences, Vicky's going to love you just as much. And, yeah, I don't really know what I'm trying to say. But she was someone who, that sort of feeling is a feeling you find anywhere. Another reflection is something that kind of came out of a conversation I overheard that I wasn't really a part of. When the motorcycle tour came to Yayagua and visited our office, we were all eating lunch together, and I overheard a conversation between two of the participants, not Pastor Jim, but it was one person saying to another, I think it's a mistake for MCC to partner with non-religious organizations. I think that's pulling us away from what we should be. And I didn't say anything because I wasn't part of their conversation. I was just overhearing it. But I was thinking about that afterwards because the partner I worked for was not a religious organization. And I think that I disagree with them. I think that God is active and is working in all the parts of our lives, whether or not they're explicitly religious. And so I think it is worth partnering with people and organizations that are different from us in that way too. I think that God works through Prodi as they improve the quality of life for people who are living with the injustice of poverty. And I think that their goal of achieving the buen vivir, living well, especially the part of balance between human beings and nature, fits with my understanding of shalom, which I understand as living in right relationships with God, with ourselves, with other people, and with creation. So I saw that connection there, and I think that it is valuable to partner in that way. And finally, the last reflection is just the importance of reflection and taking time to intentionally be together with other people to think and process experiences. And the reason I chose the scripture from Luke 24 about the road to Emmaus is because when our seed group went to Guatemala in September, this is a picture from one evening when we were assigned to lead a devotional, our Bolivia group. And we were assigned, this chapter was our chapter for that week that we were together, and we were assigned verse 32, which says, they asked each other, were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us? So what we did was lay out an aguayo on the ground and put on it different symbols that we brought with us that represented times in our life in Bolivia that we felt like we had seen God working or felt him accompanying us. That word accompaniment again. What are the times that we saw him or recognized that he was present? And the men walking together on the road to Emmaus didn't realize while Jesus was with them that it was him. It was afterwards when they were talking to each other that they said, oh yeah, we did feel that fire within us. Later, they were talking together and realizing that. And so I think that these spaces of reflection are really important so that we can see and recognize those places where God has been working in our lives. And that's kind of what I wanted to tie this all together with today. These are some of the places and people and experiences that I saw God working in my life and in other people's lives in Bolivia. And thanks for listening. It's, like I said, it's really, really hard to feel like I can say as much as I want to in this short time. So if you want to know more about something, please ask me. I'm happy to answer any questions. And if some of the pictures were kind of small, if you want to see a picture again, let me know. So I think I'll just end with that and a couple of prayer requests, ways that you can pray for MCC Bolivia and their work. One way that you can pray is for there to be a renewed agreement between MCC and the Bolivian government. That's something that agreement is their like legal permission to work in the country of Bolivia, and it's a very, very tedious and very lengthy process. They've been working on this for 2 years now. And it takes up a lot of time for the staff in the office, and it makes visas really difficult to get. So if that were to be renewed, that would free up a whole lot of MCC Bolivia's time to actually focus on the work that they're doing. Also for the team there, as they expect a lot of transitions, the reps are coming up on the end of their term. Some of the other programs also have leaders that are coming up on the end of their terms, like the Low German Mennonite program. There's also the area director for Central and South America is also coming up on the end of her term. So there's going to be a lot of change in the program pretty soon. You can also pray for Eli, the new seed facilitator who was part of my group, and she's now in Bolivia again in orientation as the new facilitator. And just for all of the MCC partners and their workers and the people who benefit from their programs. So, thanks.